You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Cudd, joined, as always, by Patrick Fitzgerald. In this episode, we are going to go over the latest news and notes around baseball, recap the hitter and pitcher performances from this past week, and, of course, give some streamer recommendations at the end of the show. Before we get into it, Patrick, how are you doing?
Hey, John, I'm doing all right, other than wishing that my online championship team would remember how to hit the ball and steal some bases. I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm doing all right. August, beginning of August is kind of when it feels like fantasy leagues are really coming down to the wire. I'm in the money in my home league. We're in the semifinals right now, so feeling good about that. But a couple of the other fantasy leagues I'm in, I'm at least, you know, in the top half, or, you know, trying to shoot for a playoff spot. So, you know, these last couple of weeks, I guess, before playoffs start in, you know, September-ish, whenever your playoffs start, it feels like it's kind of coming down to the wire. You got to make the right moves.
Yep. Yeah, we got a trade deadline today, and a lot of Yahoo leagues I know might be the same on ESPN too. I made the difficult decision to sell for the first time in my home, like, keeper type league. So sure. First time in, I think, 5 years in the league I've had to sell instead of, you know, making the playoffs. So a little bit of a bummer, but, you know, should have got affordable Tarek Skubal and Kyle Bradish keeps next year, so should be able to build a solid team around that.
Yeah, that should be nice. Definitely Skubal. I mean, you can get the best pitcher for cheap. That's already a win.
Yep, I unfortunately dropped Nick Kurtz a few months ago, and he was playing terribly, and I'm going to regret that one for a couple of years. So, you know, that's how it goes sometimes.
For sure. Yeah, I dropped Nick Kurtz in a redraft league, so I didn't feel as bad because I was like, oh, well, maybe I could just pick him up next year. But yeah, it was I had him as soon as he came up, and then he just wasn't doing that great, dropped him, and then he just went on his tear. I was like, oh, no, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, the timing was just, it was uncanny.
Yeah, just brutal. Well, anyways, before we get into the rest of the show, just a reminder that you can follow our podcast on Twitter, at ThisWeekPL. You can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email, thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. Again, we're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Wherever you listen to your podcast, make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. All right, we are going to start with injury news, and thankfully there's not a lot of updates, but that's kind of because there's a lot of people who are just out for season at this point, or the teams are pretty slow in getting the back, so there's not a whole lot of fun, interesting updates to talk about. But we're going to start with the people who got placed on the injured list, starting with Tyro Estrada of the Rockies. He's on the injured list for a hamstring injury. Jacob Mizorowski ended up on the injured list last weekend after we kind of released our show. He has a shin injury, but he should be back basically just after missing two starts. So don't know if this is Milwaukee just trying to save some bullets for Mizorowski, or if he was legitimately hurt enough to get a stint on the injured list. But regardless, he should be back basically after the minimum. Michael Soroka, really tough one here. Basically traded to the Cubs. And his first start, I believe, with the Cubs, maybe it was second start, I can't remember, right shoulder strain, and he could be out for season now, which is super unfortunate. He was having a great season coming back, essentially, in Washington. The numbers weren't great, but you could tell, like, the stuff was still there. But, yeah, now it looks like he might be dealing with a pretty serious injury. Nick Lodolo going on the injury list as well, dealing with a finger blister. Not sure when his return is going to be coming back, but hopefully with an injury like that, it should be soon. Tommy Edman dealing with a right ankle sprain. He is going to be out for a bit. And the curse of the Diamondbacks closer continues as Kevin Gigold now is going on the injury list with a right shoulder strain. So, yeah, a bunch of pitcher injuries here. Some little short-term, some a little long-term. But, yeah, I guess it's kind of the unfortunate thing if, you know, as we're kind of coming down to playoff time, essentially, in fantasy, injuries still kind of can impact your team.
Yep, you kind of just got to cross your fingers and hope for the best at this point. The Mizorowski one, don't want to say it's phantom IL, but it is pretty convenient that he, you know, comes up with a minor injury while they're trying to limit his innings. You know, it will give Logan Henderson some opportunity, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be, you know, it's going to last more than a couple starts, unfortunately. Lodolo, that one's interesting. They're going to have Nick Martinez back in the rotation, but probably only for one start because Hunter Green's about to come back. But what this might do is, you know, buy Chase Burns a little bit more rotation time, you know, with Lodolo out. So that could be nice, you know, give Burns a little bit more of an opportunity to kind of get his ratios down. And then Tommy Edman, it looks like Alex Freeland is going to get a lot of reps. They also got Max Muncy back, so it's a little cloudy in the infield, but, you know, a somewhat interesting prospect promoted, but probably not a ton of fantasy hype for this year. But yeah, some interesting, you know, ripple effects, even though there isn't that many injuries this week.
Yeah. Well, moving to some maybe happier news, Michael King, he could be returning on Saturday. He threw 61 pitches in his last rehab start. I was kind of remembering how he got hurt, and I basically was reminded he basically like slept wrong. And then he was out for 3 months. So that's kind of how baseball injuries sometimes go, unfortunately. But yeah, it looks like King will be back this weekend. Aaron Judge, you know, kind of the big thing with him was he really hurt? How hurt is he? Ended up spending the minimum time on the injury list. Came back on Tuesday, I believe. Luke Keyshaw of the Twins, he came back after breaking his forearm, getting hit by a pitch. Was really good in his first two games back with the Twins. I don't know if I'd consider him like a must pickup in like even a 15 teamer, you know, he's still kind of raw. I think he's maybe played 10 major league games so far, but of those 10, it's been really, really encouraging to see, you know, very good speed. He finally hit a homer, I believe on Wednesday or maybe it was Tuesday, but yeah, intriguing prospect nonetheless. Spencer Arrigetti of the Astros also came back on Monday, I believe was his return. Was not a great start, but it's nice to see him back on the mound. And as you mentioned, Max Muncy now back from the Dodgers and kind of slots in very nicely to that roster spot vacated by Tommy Edman.
Yep. Yeah. Bumpy's first start back for Arrigetti. He's a guy where I guess I get the hype around him. You know, he has high strikeout upside, and obviously Houston's great at developing, you know, pitchers. So I understand it a little bit, but I've always had a tough time getting on board. Like the ratio risk seems really real with him. So, you know, I'm always a little bit hesitant to kind of get on his hype train. Judge, great to see him back after the minimum. And then Keyshaw, yeah, I think he showed a lot of speed in the, you know, week of games before he got hit by that pitch and broke his forearm. So if that sticks around, I think he could end up being a must add, especially because I'm pretty sure in Yahoo he has like first base, second base, and outfield eligibility. Even though he's only played second base, I'm pretty sure, in the majors, like whatever carried over from the minor league. So he's like a nice, you know, positionally versatile bench piece, even maybe in your shallower formats.
Yeah, there's definitely more value there. I have him on the injured list in an ESPN league, and he only has second base eligibility. So It's a little tough to kind of, you know, make a decision to just, you know, keep a guy in your roster, essentially, who just only has second base eligibility. But it is a position that isn't very good. I just happen to Glaber, so it kind of is working out right now for me to not have to fill second base on that team.
Yeah, sometimes I don't know where Yahoo comes up with their stuff from. Like, I have Marcell Ozuna in the league, and he has outfield eligibility, even though he didn't play a single game in the outfield last year. Like, I don't know how they come up with their stuff, but, you know, I'm not complaining.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit more fun to play with that eligibility if it's available. Yeah. And some other injury news, both Hunter Green and Jameson Taillon likely need one more rehab start before they come back to the majors. Chris Sale, he faced hitters in live BP. Atlanta manager Brian Snitker said probably one rehab start before he returns as well. He's coming back from a broken rib, I believe. So, you know, everything mechanically is fine for him. It's just, you know, kind of healing from this situation. Bryce Miller had 65 pitches in his last rehab start, likely one more outing before he's activated. Zach Eflin of the Orioles, I believe he got some form of injection, so there's currently no timetable for his return. And Jackson Churio of the Brewers, he's looking to return in 2 to 4 weeks. He, you know, was on the IL, placed on the IL last week. So maybe sometime like late August or mid to late August is probably when the Brewers expecting Churio to return. And then finally, Cade Cavalli back in the majors for the first time since 2022. Had a nice little start, 4.1 innings, 6 strikeouts, 3 hits, no earned runs. I mean, kind of notable for him. Just was a, you know, a little bit of a, was a top prospect a couple years back, but just kind of dealing with injuries and a slow comeback from that. But nice first start for him. I don't know if it's a ton of value for him, obviously playing for the Nationals, but nonetheless, it's nice to see him come back and actually have a decent outing.
Yeah, the results are kind of uneven in AAA for him this year too, so I would stay away for now. But yeah, I think the biggest takeaway here is Sale. It was kind of radio silence on him for almost like a month or so after the injury, so it seemed like, you know, obviously Schwellenbach almost definitely out for the season, and then it seemed like Sale like maybe would come back, maybe wouldn't, but now it seems like we might get, you know, a month out of him or even more, so that's pretty big. And then yeah, Bryce Miller, he's actually about to start his rehab, or his, you know, final rehab start tonight, so we'll see how that goes. He should be back soon.
Yeah. Hopefully Bryce is back in a good way too. I mean, we've been talking about Seattle Aces pretty much this entire season. And I think Logan Gilbert's like finally coming back to form. George Kirby is still kind of about the same, where he's been all season, like just decent, but nothing super awesome. But yeah, Bryce looked good at least in his pitch, in his outings, just sandwiched between all his injured list stints. So yeah, it would be nice to see him come back and healthy, finally.
Yeah, still a good play at home games. Probably he has really, really big home road splits like a lot of the Seattle pitchers. But if his first start back is at home, you know, it might be worth throwing a dart. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we are going to move on to player performances, starting with Friday, August 1st, and who we have starting off with the batters.
Yep, we got one of the hottest hitters in baseball right now. You know, kind of improbably if we had told you that a couple months ago, but that's how the game goes sometimes. Justin Havelock's hitter recap was Vaughn of the Dead, which is, of course, a shout-out to Andrew Vaughn, who I will be talking about. So he went 3-for-5 with 3 runs scored, a home run, and 3 RBIs, just kind of continuing to mash. This was his 11th homer of the season, his 6th since joining the Brewers, but I believe he's up to 12 now. Exit velocity up big, 94.4 miles per hour, plus 2.9 miles per hour from his stint on the White Sox earlier this year before the trade. Barrel rate up to 18%, which is almost a 5 percentage point jump, and the hard hit rate up to 58%, which is almost a 10 percentage point jump. So even if there is some regression, he's clearly showing some improvements, you know, to his already okay but not great power hitting profile. And the Brewers, you know, they had Vaughn in AAA for a little bit, and it seems like they did get something to click. He's also improved his chase rate greatly, so 23% chase rate so far with the Brewers at this point, which is 13 percentage points better than what he was doing with Chicago. So clearly a ton of improvements from Vaughn here, and it's been about a month since he was called up to be on the Brewers, and he's got pretty much everyday playing time with the Rhys Hoskins injury. So I think, you know, with him on a tear, I think to me he's an all formats must roster, even as first base only eligibility. But where are you? Do you share that thought?
Yeah, I actually picked him up in my 10-ish teamer last week, just because he's just been doing so well. I mean, I already had Vlad at first base, but, you know, the open util spot, and Vaughn's really mashing and just doing really well, just because, I mean, the nice thing for him is that he's really a four-category contributor, right? Like, the average is a little bit low. It's not great, but, you know, it's good enough that, and if he's, you know, mashing, he's going to get, you know, he's going to get runs, he's going to get RBI. I think there's just something there, especially with just how weak first base is as well. You know, if you don't have one of the, you know, let's just say like top five guys, and like Naylor, Alonso, Vlad, right? It's definitely worth a shot to like pick a guy like Andrew Vaughn and just see how he does for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he should be owned everywhere if he's not already, which he probably is. It's actually interesting because, you know, obviously he's had a kind of a few seasons of mediocre production, and then this year was really bad with Chicago, but he had actually made some really promising improvements, like in terms of strikeout rate, and then he was pulling as many balls in the air, like career high pull air rate, and he was just underachieving his expected stuff by like a lot. So it's funny to, you know, see him. He was having like probably the worst season of his career, gets sent down, gets traded, you know, basically a cast off, and that is just going off, even though I don't think he actually like got worse. I think he was just hitting into a lot of bad luck. So it's obviously shocking to see the level that he's going at right now, but, you know, it's also kind of funny to see that, you know, clearly the changes that he made worked, and obviously he's a guy with a lot of pedigree. So, you know, kind of like Spencer Torkelson, like you thought maybe he could get back to a level, you know, where he is a pretty solid hitter.
Yeah, one stat doesn't necessarily explain everything, but this season his BABIP is 263 compared to his career average of 287. So 20 points there is pretty big, right? That's a couple hits there, a couple hits there. That brings your average, you know, your average could be in the 250s, 260s. And instead, his season average right now is 244. Obviously, it's better with Milwaukee, so the numbers there are a little bit more, a little bit better. But, you know, like you said, all those metrics look really good, right? The hard contact rate, he's doesn't have an insane strikeout rate, like the pull air rate, like you mentioned, like that's pretty solid as well. His line drive rate's up this year, which really isn't necessarily a thing you can control, but it is nice to see as like one evidence that like maybe something is working for him as well. But yeah, I mean, the numbers, just the even though the real stats aren't necessarily saying that stuff is looking good on the season as a whole, right? The expected the underlying stats look really good for him.
Yeah, so maybe the batting average is a little bit better. You know, the actual true talent batting average is a little bit better than, you know, what he's shown so far. So on the pitching side, another I guess Vaughn's still a young guy. So another young guy on the pitching side, Nick's SP roundup was the real Slim Brady, which is a shout out to Brady Singer. He did have a great outing, but he had a poor outing tonight against the Pirates, and I feel like he's just kind of off our radars, you know, kind of a ratio risk at this point for our shallower league. So I'm going to talk about Cade Horton. He went against the Orioles on this day, on Friday the 1st. He got the win. Five scoreless innings, two hits, three walks, only three strikeouts, seven whiffs, but a 34% CSW, only 71 pitches, so they are limiting him a little bit. He was able to get the win in a pitcher's duel against Trevor Rogers. There was nothing, you know, kind of overwhelming about Horton's performance. Mixed in a good amount of sweepers to righties. Changeups were not super competitive out of the zone, or they were well spotted kind of backdoor in the inside corner. Horton's a guy who doesn't have a traditional four-seamer. He kind of has a little bit of a cut ride four-seamer that he sprays a little bit. You know, Nick has kind of been in and out on Horton. He thinks he has a decent floor and, you know, obviously pitching for a good team, but he doesn't have super high strikeout upside. So Nick kind of sees him as a decent Toby. He slots in 67th on the list right now. And then he had a really good outing against the Reds after this. I believe he went 5 2/3 scoreless with 6 Ks and only like two base runners. So Horton has really been stacking a lot of solid outings lately. And we have a tough decision coming up with him. I couldn't put him in my streamers because he's too high rostered, but he's got a two start that has one great start and one tough one. It's at Toronto and then home against Pittsburgh. So has Horton been good enough in good enough of a groove that we're just rolling with that, or are you a little bit scared of Toronto?
I think I'm a little scared of Toronto. Like, they just had a great series in Colorado, granted
Yeah.
in Colorado, but like everyone was mashing. And it's not that Cade actually has like a home run issue. His home run per nine this year is 0.79, so very good in terms of that, you know, that sort of power suppression. Ground ball rate's pretty decent, 48%. Fly ball rate's only at 21%. So there's something that could be said there about that he could maybe handle those Toronto bats. I think the really annoying thing is just the pitch count. He got to 67 pitches today, and then they pulled him before getting the quality start there. He did get the win, which is great. But I think if you're in like a quality starts league, Horton is harder and harder to trust on a start by start basis. But if the ratios continue to be good, like, and he's, you know, worth, let's just say, three categories in a quality start league and four in a wins league, you know, I think it's probably worth rolling the dice if you're in a weekly league. If you're in a daily league, I think I'd just avoid that Toronto start. But if you're in a weekly league, I think I'd feel probably okay starting him against both.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying about, you know, league format and also daily stuff. I think you can skip Toronto pretty easily. And then yeah, wins leagues, I think it's a much stronger play. He clearly is being managed. He only threw 34 innings last year in the minors because he had I think a shoulder injury, and he's already over 100 this year across all levels. So, you know, they're going to baby him a little bit down the stretch. He might even get pushed back off that Pittsburgh start, right? I think that that's a non-zero possibility. So even though he has been really solid, I don't think it's necessarily a slam dunk play, but definitely some formats where he's useful for this upcoming week.
Yeah, and that's what maybe makes him a little dicey in weekly leagues, right? Because you just don't know what the Cubs are going to do with his workload. If, you know, they skip a start here or something like that, which, you know, could happen. We just don't know this early into the week. That's the problem.
Yeah, a little bit of a guessing game.
Yeah. All right, moving on to Saturday. We are going to start with the hitter recap article from Kevin O'Brien, pulling the Leover. Of course, referring to Leover Perguero, who probably, unless you play Dynasty baseball or you follow Pirates baseball, you just have no clue who this guy is. But he had a great day on Saturday. 3 for 5 with 3 homers, 3 runs, and 5 RBI. He's been up with the team for about 2 weeks this stint, mostly playing short, but also playing first base, which is kind of weird. Not really the skill set I put for him. But this game was also in Coors, so I would take this line with a huge grain of salt. On the season, he's slashing 237, 310, 579. With a 29% strikeout rate and a 7.1% walk rate, and that's through 42 games. He is not the Pirates' everyday shortstop in any shape or form. But with the Ke'Bryan Hayes trade, you know, there's been a little bit more space in the Pirates' infield, which is why Perguero has been up. He has a talent to be a very interesting power-speed combo, but the Pirates just have really never bothered to really promote him or give him a lot of time up in the majors. And I don't know. He hasn't been able to stick, but those last 2 weeks have been pretty decent for him. So that all being said, Is Paguero even worth a look at in like the deepest of NL only leagues, or is he still even too risky for that type of format?
Yeah, I mean, maybe in deep NL only, right? I think he still kind of comfortably slots behind like some of his more fringe teammates that we've talked about before, like Nick Gonzalez, we talked about a few weeks ago. And then Spencer Horwitz, who I don't think we've talked about, but also had some really good games in Coors Field. Those guys get a little bit more playing time. So I think that he kind of, you know, he's not as appealing as they are. Even Tommy Pham has been playing pretty well lately. So I think maybe in your super deep formats, you know, he's going to get some positional versatility, right? It looks like. So, you know, maybe not a bad bench piece in a deep NL only, but I think that's really as far as it goes. He wasn't great in AAA before he got called up. So, you know, hard to be super optimistic, especially not with everyday playing time and a not great offense.
Yeah, the struggle with him is that he's just pretty much platooned. He's a right-handed batter, but so, you know, they just don't want to necessarily put him in against right-handers all that much. So he is playing against lefties anytime they face a lefty, but that's kind of why he's got some weird positional splits of being like at shortstop and first base, because the Pirates are just kind of moving guys around and not really being consistent about who's playing what position at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if he does well enough, Jared Triola is their starting shortstop right now, so you know, he could definitely earn some more PT.
Yeah, I dropped him from Dynasty last year and have not looked back. So
can't blame.
Paguero is just one of those guys where I wish he was good, but just has not turned out well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, moving on to the pitcher recap article. Thanks to Nick for the SP roundup. Snell bottom blues. We're not going to talk about Snelly, but we are going to talk about Max Scherzer, who went up against Kansas City, got the win. 6 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, no walks, and 5 strikeouts. Yeah, Nick's big fan of Scherzer. He said, you know, there's another good outing with the heater and the slider. Changeup isn't really that great, but his upcoming schedule is pretty decent. He's got the Dodgers, which is kind of weird to say that's a decent matchup, but they just haven't been that great the past couple of weeks. And then he's got the Rangers and the Pirates and the Twins afterwards, which is probably at least 2 really good starts, maybe 3 if you think the Rangers are a little bit of a weak hitting team. That's a really good schedule for any pitcher, and if it's Max Scherzer, you know, that's pretty solid as well. 3 out of his 4 last starts were quality starts. And the start actually before this one where he faced Kansas City, he just carved up the Tigers for 11 strikeouts, did give up 3 earned runs, but did go 6 innings in that one. So with that all being said, is Scherzer back? He was dealing with just weird injuries throughout the beginning of the season, but now he's kind of consistently found a groove in Toronto. And is he someone who's, you know, basically worth picking up in like a 12-teamer or not?
Yeah, I think he's back in terms of like he's can be an effective pitcher for your fantasy team. I think Justin Verlander has maybe put this, you know, theory to the test a little bit this year, but it kind of seems like these legendary guys, Scherzer, Kershaw, Verlander, like if they're on the mound, they're going to be pitching well. And I guess Verlander, you know, he's a little older too, and he's kind of struggled, but Scherzer, you know, he's had his injuries in the last couple of years. That's been the biggest issue. But when he's on the mound, he's pretty effective. I think at this point, he does have some home run risk, and that can hurt your ERA. But from a strikeout perspective, the strikeouts are there. And from a whip perspective, it's solid, right? He's comfortably, you know, under 1-2 right now. So I think that, yeah, he kind of has one of those more underrated fantasy profiles. The ERA is a little bit ugly, but I do think it's going to drop. Yeah, the whip is 1.05 right now. So yeah, that's probably going to go up, but you know, that's an elite mark. So clearly the swing and miss is there. His stuff is up a tick, I think, from last year velo-wise. And we haven't heard anything about the thumb, so I guess we just have to assume that he's okay. I mean, it seems like it's the type of thing that's always going to bother him a little bit, but if we're not hearing anything, I think we just got to, you know, we just got to lean into it.
Right, yeah. It's probably, you can't assume this is the Scherzer of like 3-4 years ago, but the Scherzer now, stuff-wise, is still really good. 29% CSW rate, which is resulting in a 26.5 strikeout rate. The control is just as good as ever, only a 4.9% walk rate. So yeah, just Scherzer is still a really solid pitcher. He just kind of was shaky at the beginning of the season, probably just due to injury and you deal with that thumb that you mentioned. But yeah, now that he's back, it does seem like there's at least some sort of, you know, consistent success with him. And you can usually expect probably a quality start out of him. The ERA is still a little suspect, but yeah, everything else looks pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, his numbers across the past 2 years before this, it comes out to like a 3.8 ERA, 1.13 whip, and a strikeout an inning. You know, that's a back end, really valuable fantasy starter, so you take that.
Yeah.
So on Sunday the 3rd, Johnny Gordon, his hitter recap was 2 for the price of 1, which is a shout out to Bryce Terang, who had a power binge 2-home run game kind of out of nowhere on Sunday. I'm going to be talking about another promising young hitter, though. That's Colson Montgomery of the White Sox. I believe he's shortstop and third base eligible. Came up as a shortstop, but playing a decent amount of third base right now. Just got promoted. He went 2 for 4 with a home run, a run, and 4 RBI. And Montgomery's haters coming into, you know, his promotion, they were pointing to his bad stats at AAA, you know, expecting that he would get, you know, have a lot of struggles once he got called up. I think he actually spent some time on the development list in AAA, so they kind of reworked his swing and took a break, and then he kind of took off and got promoted. And he's kind of just hit the ground running. He's got called up after the All-Star break, and he's been a great player for the White Sox in the last, you know, few weeks. 7th home run in 11 games came on Sunday. I believe he's added another since then. He's now up to 24 RBI on the season and is consistently hitting 5th every day in the order. Johnny's saying buy in Dynasty and buy in Redraft as well if you need corner infield or middle infield help in 12-team leagues. Clearly, he's showing some power, but, you know, I'm a little tepid. I'm a little worried. Is this kind of a heater, or do you agree that we should buy in a little bit more?
Well, he doesn't have great home run numbers in the minors. His number one year, I guess, was 2024, where he hit 18 homers in AAA. So being at 8 already in the majors seems like a little bit of a high watermark for him. You know, that being said, it's also the White Sox lineup. So unfortunately, the rest of the counting stats are probably going to be coming a little bit few and far between. I don't know if I'd grab him at 12 teamers. I think 15 makes more sense for him. If you need someone with that type of position eligibility in a 12 teamer, maybe I could see it making sense there. But to me, I think I'd maybe cool off a little bit. The power binge is nice, right? But it's still like essentially 4 homers in 5 games is kind of, well, I should say 5 homers in 7 games is kind of what really has been contributing to the numbers here. Is that sustainable? Probably not. But it does show that maybe he does have some power in his makeup, even if we haven't seen that in the minors.
Yeah, it's a tough case. I think if you're adding him in a shallower league, you just keep a super short leash. You know, I don't think that means that you should just ignore him, but, you know, he could go in a big slump. It's hard to judge, you know, it's hard to judge prospects at all. And, you know, one thing we look at is their minor league track record. But when you have someone who got basically pulled out of games for a couple weeks to work on their swing and then came back and started playing really well, it's a question of, like, how heavily do you weight what they were doing before compared to what they were doing after? Because, like, he has an 82 WRC plus in AAA, and he hasn't had an above average minor league hitting season since 2023 when he was in high A and double A. So it's like, I want to be worried, but at the same time, like, you know, he has high prospect pedigree and maybe he unlocks something. I do think that the batting average floor with this new kind of power heavy approach he's leaning into is pretty low. You know, he's hitting 245 and dropping. So it might kind of be just a lot of power in the profile. So you kind of just got to know his limitations a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, 24 RBI in 27 games is still pretty decent, right? Like that's a pretty good number. And even on this weak White Sox team, right? Like they're not like that weak. They're not historically weak like they were last year, right? So it's not that down of an offense, comparatively speaking. So he could still have some value, right? If you're just looking for some homers and some RBI, and you're okay with, you know, dealing with the lower average, like, yeah, it could be worth a pickup. But I agree. Keep him on a short lease if you do have him on your team.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, his swing strike rate's pushing like 18%. OBP leagues, I think you got to stay away. Like the floor there is just too low.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the pitching side on the 3rd, it was Carson Wisenhunt was Nick's cover boy on the CW this week, was the SP roundup title. But I'm going to talk about someone who's just been on a great run lately, and it continued on Sunday. It was his second start of the week for Lucas Giolito, and he got the win against the Astros. He went 8 innings, 1 earned, 3 hits, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts. So great whip game, not a lot of Ks. 9 whiffs, 22% CSW on 103 pitches. And despite not having his best velocity and fastball, you know, Nick knows that he did locate well enough, and Koufax, meaning, you know, good BABIP, took care of the rest, even at home in Fenway. Schedule's a little bit rough coming up. Looks like might be at San Diego, home against Miami, and then at the Yankees in Baltimore. But it kind of seems like Giolito's in such a good run that you might just have to roll with it. I have him in a couple leagues, and like I nervously start him or I sit him and then I regret it, because it just seems like the strikeouts aren't there. You look at PLV, you look at Stuff Plus, you look at ERA estimators, whatever it is that you like to look at for pitching, like they all suggest that he's more of a low to mid fours ERA pitcher than the 3.6, whatever he's got going right now. So it seems like it's only a matter of time when the regression gets to him, but like it hasn't come yet and he keeps spinning solid outings like this. So I'm like just a little bit, I don't know which way to go, but I feel like you kind of just have to, until he burns you, I think you just gotta start the guy, I guess, right?
Yeah, and we talked about Giolito earlier in the season. We just kind of said, like, his season's got to go the way his changeup goes. And yet his changeup's actually been awful, and he's been fine. Changeup this season, only a 14% swinging strike rate, compared to 2023 was at 18%. In the start against Houston, he got two whiffs on it on 17th thrown. But he's, yeah, finding some magic with this four-seam slider combination. The four-seam especially has been kind of off the charts in terms of getting called strikes. 21%, which is kind of in line with his a little better than MLB average. It's kind of in line with where his career average is in terms of called strikes on the four-seamer. But he's using it a lot more than he has in years past. So I don't know. Maybe that four-seam slider combination is kind of all he needs right now. Against this little bit tougher competition that is a little scary, I have him in a league, and I'm wondering if I'm starting him for that Padres matchup as well. But yeah, kind of like you, I'm just like, if kind of go until he burns me, and I don't know what burns. I don't know how bad it needs to get for me to drop Giolito. I think that's the one problem. He didn't have a great start against Philly, but I also was not thinking that was going to be a start I was going to put him in again. So maybe a slightly weaker team like the Padres, which are still really good, you know, it's probably worth still putting him in for that one.
Yeah, he's been like my number one headache on my OC team. I added him, and then he killed me, and then I dropped him, and then I added him back, and he had a two-start week, and it wasn't like great matchups, and I was too scared to start it, and I didn't, and he had a great week. And then last week they hit us with a surprise two-start. He went Tuesday, yep. And they had an off day, and they sent Richard Fitz down in the middle of the week. So Giolito got two starts, even though he wasn't scheduled for two starts. And I had him on my bench because I thought he was only going to get one start. And it's just like he throws this gem on Sunday, and it's, yep, like, just throw your hands up. You know, what can you do?
Yeah, I was in the same boat where the league I have him is an ESPN league, and we're limited to – it was a two-week because it's the playoffs, so it's 2 weeks. So we're limited to 20 starts. So I hit the limit on Saturday. And then I was like, oh, Giolito's going on Sunday. So I don't even get his stats for this. And, of course, he just goes out and has, like, one of the better starts of the season for him. So I was a little frustrated by that. But at least it was like, well, he's doing well against Houston, which did not look good at all this past weekend. So there's that. But nonetheless, it's a little frustrating. I'm kind of with you on how much of a headache he's kind of been in trying to figure out, is he worth keeping or not?
Yeah.
All right, well, moving on to Monday, speaking of Astros, thanks to Christian Oddman for the No Pena, No Gain hitter recap article, of course referring to Jeremy Pena, who just recently came off the injury list. Definitely good timing for the Astros because they were struggling in the infield. But we're not going to talk about a different AL shortstop, specifically Bo Bichette, where, like we mentioned, Toronto and Colorado was just homers galore. No defense to speak of whatsoever, just homers left and right. And Bo Bichette was a big part of that. 3-for-6, 2 homers, 2 runs, and 6 RBI. He might never reach that 30-30 potential that he flashed in 2021. I think he's at 4 steals this season. But he's been a decent contributor nonetheless. I think he was a little bit slow to start the gate, but he's definitely picked up as the season's gone on. Currently 16 homers, 58 runs, 78 RBI, slashing .310, .340, .475. Walks aren't great, but the average is pretty solid. The line in July was especially interesting, a .357 average, .400 OBP, .541 slugging slash line. He's currently ranked as the third best shortstop in roto leagues. I don't know if that feels real. I feel like Bichette's been very under the radar this entire season, and maybe that's just because the counting stats aren't super flashy, but the average has been really, really good. Would you be buying high or selling high on Bichette right now?
I don't think I would be buying high, but I'm also like not trying to get out from under this any way I can. If someone's reluctant to pay full price for Bichette, buy him as a top like five or six shortstop and get that, the return that's comparable with that. I think you just hold it and let it ride. I actually traded for him maybe like a month ago or so. I traded Corey Seager for Bo Bichette and Dylan Cease. I was interested in the kind of the buy low on Cease there, and I thought Seager would turn it around, which he has, but wasn't 100% certain it would happen. And Texas offense is kind of mediocre, but I mean Bichette has been kind of the win of the trade, not even Cease. He's just been incredible. He's hitting cleanup right now, which I feel like is not somewhere he's really historically hit in his Blue Jays career. Maybe that will change when George Springer comes back from his concussion, but Toronto's scoring a ton of runs and he's right in the middle of it. So the RBIs have actually been better than the runs, which I feel like is a little bit unique for Bichette, but I think you just roll with it. I think he's not going to steal a lot, right? The speed has, it seems like it's not really a fantasy factor with him anymore. But I think that in his offensive context, the batting average and then the counting stats are enough. He's not, going to have crazy power, but he's definitely doing enough, to contribute in that department. So I don't know if he's going to end up in the top three in shortstop, but I also don't think, this is like a complete unsustainable stretch that you need to run away from.
Yeah, like it was a really good July, right? That really did happen. But the other months have been pretty solid as well. So it hasn't just been like he's been really good because of one good month. He's been pretty consistently decent the entire season. I think he just started out really slow. And I think because of that, he got kind of, put off a little bit of some of the radar of fantasy guys. But yeah, he's doing better than Turner, Story, Lindor, Gunnar Henderson. I mean, that one's a little bit of a cheap one because Henderson was hurt for a month, but
Only a little bit, though, but yeah.
that's true. It wasn't that long, but yeah, but Bichette's been outperforming all those guys, and it's kind of impressive to see that, especially from a guy who was like a top three pick like 2, 3 years ago, and then just absolutely crashed down to earth. And yeah, he still has some fantasy value now, which is impressive to see.
Yeah, this strikeout rate right now is like under 15%, whereas his best season before that is like 19%. So that might regress a little bit, and then maybe the batting average will fall a little bit below 300, but he's always been a guy with a great hit tool.
Yeah, and we only have 2 months left of the baseball season, so it's like, how much can he truly
Yeah,
regress at this point?
that's true.
All right, moving on to pitching. Thanks to Jason Bourne yesterday, the SB Roundup article from Nick. We're not going to talk about Jason Alexander, who's kind of an interesting pitcher for the Astros right now, but we're going to talk about Brayan Bello instead for the Red Sox. Got the win against Kansas City, 6 innings, no earned runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. Yeah, Bayo's been pretty solid. Nick has him kind of as a Holly slash, a little bit top end Toby kind of guy, where it's like, he's kind of in the 50 to 40 range in his rankings. Dating back to the start of the July, though, and he's had 7 starts since that point. He's picked up 5 wins, 5 quality starts. The strikeouts aren't the most impressive thing with Bayo. It's just at 18% strikeout rate. Walk rate's also not something you like at 9% there. But he's doing enough to stay competitive in games, even though the ratios don't look pretty. The numbers have been fine for the last month, right? Nothing super flashy. He did have like a complete game a couple starts ago, which was kind of random. But yeah, I don't know. Is Bayo a guy that you would just be firmly okay with on a roster in a 12-teamer league? Or is he still a little bit more of like a premium matchup-based play where you still avoid him against like really tough offenses?
Yeah, I think like maybe the toughest matchups you sit out, but I think with the groove he's in right now, you stick with it. He's never really been a favorite of mine. Like I think that the profile of decent ERA but terrible WHIP gets overvalued in fantasy because we just look at ERA first, especially with the low strikeout ceiling that he has. So, right now he's got a 3.03 ERA at 8 wins. That's great. He has a 1.28 WHIP and he's striking out like 6.5 guys per 9, right? So you're not getting all category contribution here. But he is in a nice groove. It seems like the addition of the cutter, he's kind of taking that 3 fastballs approach, the 4-seam sinker cutter that, kind of adds a little bit of deception, right? It's harder to for guys to sit on a pitch because you have 3 fastballs coming in. So I think that that will kind of unlock something for him, but I think what it's going to do is basically take him from a shallow league, pure streamer kind of afterthought to like a fringe roster guy. So it's an upgrade in the profile, but I could honestly see him getting like really overdrafted next year, and I don't think I'm going to be in on it.
Yeah, I think the problem with him is that he doesn't really have an out pitch, right? Like, swinging strike rate is down to 9%. So that already is kind of a key. Like, he just can't get whiffs and just can't. Mm-hmm. It's tough for him to get strikeouts. But like you mentioned, just the three fastball approach doesn't really lend itself well to getting strikeouts, right? Yeah. It's good at confusing batters, but at that point, you're really trying to just get, you know, outs in terms of balls in play. And yeah, he's got a changeup that's got a 16% swing strike rate, which is like fine, but it's not as good as it has been in years past, where that's actually been like one of his better pitches. The changeup just hasn't been good this year. Added a sweeper this year, only a 12.7% swinging strike rate on that. He's actually somehow gotten more called strikes with a sweeper than whiffs, which is kind of impressive. But yeah, nonetheless, he just doesn't really have that pitch to like finish those strikeouts, finish those like two strike counts right now. And I think you kind of see that in just how high that whip is. Like, just either, you know, just walking guys or just allowing hits to go through. 8.2 hit per nine, not that bad. But yeah, it's kind of just the numbers look okay for him, but the fantasy numbers might not be the best. I think that's primarily the issue here.
Yeah, I mean, he's a ground ball pitcher with a career 8% walk rate who pitches at home at Fenway, right? And I think they're like, all three of those factors are going to make it difficult for him to ever have like a good whip for fantasy. So I think that like we even see whip problems with like Logan Webb, right? Like, he's a great fantasy pitcher, but like even he has his issues with whip. So like, I think that he's just kind of swimming upstream and working against, you know, the Red Sox don't really care what his whip is, right? They care how many outs he gets and what his ERA is. But for the game that we play, you know, that stuff matters. And I think that, you know, his value just kind of has a cap because of the type of pitcher that he is.
Yeah. So I guess in 12 teamers, keep him until the wheels fall off. Is this kind of the vibe, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah. I hate to, you know, he's on kind of the best run of his career, so I hate to, you know, pour cold water on it, but that's just kind of where I'm at. But I think, yeah, you go start by start, maybe kind of like with Giolito, and, you know, just see how it goes. Mm-hmm. So going to the fifth, Tuesday, Shea Stadium was Scott McDermott's hitter recap, and it was for Shane Langeliers. Three homer day for the 2019 first rounder out of Baylor. He's shown plus power, you know, pretty much since he debuted. He had 29 homers last year, struggled with batting average though, and a 29% strikeout rate over the last 3 years. And then, you know, it kind of seemed like he was going to be a three true outcome guy, bad batting average, maybe in the Cal Raleigh prior to this year mold. And then we've seen some really interesting, some changes in Langelier's profile. He's swinging, you know, a pretty good amount. He's pretty aggressive, but his chase rate's down. Strikeout rate has dropped a ton, over 10 percentage points to 18%. And he actually led off in this game for the first time all season, and he hit three home runs. You know, the A's just absolutely ambushed Mackenzie Gore, who just continues to be on a really rough stretch. And he added a double. So, you know, career night for Langeliers. He is catcher 5 so far, despite missing 4 weeks with an oblique strain. So he's ranked 5th behind Cal Raleigh, obviously, and then Hunter Goodman, Will Smith, and Wilson Contreras, who's going to lose catcher eligibility next year. So catcher 5 so far for Langeliers, even with the missed time. Is he a top 5 catcher for the rest of the season, and do we think that he's going to be drafted as one next year too?
Yes and yes. I admit I'm a little bit blinded because I love Shea. I've had him in Dynasty for a couple of years, ever since he, you know, was a rookie. And he's just been so much fun. And like, I think the nice thing is just the change, where last year in my Dynasty OBP league, I was like, kind of tempted, like, do I start Shea? Like, you know, maybe he's better on my bench just because the OBP wasn't great. This year, the OBP has been fantastic, which has been awesome. And like you mentioned, the average has been up again. The strikeout rate's down. I think he's just really developing as a hitter super well. And like, of those names, you know, I think he's a top 5 guy. I think it depends on, you know, he could even be top 3 for me, which maybe is a little high, but I just think the power out of him, and if this average kind of sticks, like, he could be a legitimate, like, good 4 category contributor, especially with how good this A's offense is too. That could be really helpful for just making him a more well-rounded player among catchers.
Yeah, I think 270 is a little bit unrealistic to expect for the future, but I think that, like, you know, 250, 255 is definitely in the cards. And for a catcher, that's a good batting average, right? That's even an okay batting average for most positions, but especially for a catcher. I think top 5 is definitely possible. And if he finishes the season well, I think he will kind of be like catcher five. I think, you know, Cal Raleigh, Will Smith, and then I think William Contreras, you know, he's having a down year, but he has a broken finger. I think he'll, you know, his stock will take a little bit of a hit, but I think he'll still be up there. So yeah, maybe he'll be ahead of Goodman, maybe not. That'll be kind of an interesting, you know, conversation. But yeah, definitely. I think that the park too, right? They're playing there, I think, for another 2 years, and that, yeah, that kind of, you know, gives him a nice high floor too. You know, him and like guys like Soderstrom, Rooker, you know, they're going to be able to keep blasting balls out of that park.
Yeah, I think the curious thing is going to be if Adley figures it out, right? If Adley figures it out, then we've got a very interesting conversation for catcher next year, where it's like Raleigh will be drafted first catcher for sure, but after him, it's like kind of, it's a little bit of a crapshoot on like who should be the next guy drafted, right? You could make an argument for a lot of these guys, but yeah, if Adley somehow kind of like turns it around the last like month and a half of the season, it could be a very interesting conversation.
Yeah, I think he's gonna take a little bit of a hit, and he kind of is profiling right now as like a more useful real life hitter than fantasy. You know, he walks a lot, stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I'm keeping my fingers crossed. It's been a rough, you know, last 365 days for him for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
So on the pitcher side, going back to a guy that we actually just talked about a little earlier in the Brian Baio conversation, it's Logan Webb. Walker on eggshells was Nick's SP roundup, which is about Taiwan Walker, but he's probably about to lose his rotation spot to Aaron Nola. So I'm going to go with Webb instead. He got the win at Pittsburgh on Tuesday. This is his second straight start against the Pirates, and they were both pretty good. This one was better, though. Six innings, one run, seven hits, no walks, and 10 strikeouts. So 12 whiffs, 30%, 31% CSW on 110 pitches. Nick notes that he did drop Webb on the list. He's kind of had a rough stretch of starts before this one. He was down to number 30 after, you know, he was just kind of struggling to really showcase what he was doing earlier in the year and continue it. But the sweeper in this one went 10 out of 27 called strikes, which Nick was really happy to see. And he's looking for Webb to do this one more time so he can kind of push back towards the top 20 on the list. Webb, it's kind of been interesting because this year he's posting pretty much the same ratios that we're used to from him. Right, we talked about how he's a whip risk, but he usually has an ERA in the low threes, which is great. 1.25 whip it's come with, though, which is not ideal. But I think if you haven't been paying close attention to him, you won't realize how much the strikeout rate has gone up. He's a guy, he's striking out 27% of hitters right now with a career strikeout rate of 23%. And last year was only 20.5%. So big change in the strikeout department this year for Webb, even if he hasn't necessarily been a more valuable fantasy pitcher because of the whip. So I'm thinking maybe we could get a discount on him next year. I don't know if you would be in, you know, like let's say he goes, I don't know, like pick 60 or something like that. Like that seems like a really intriguing price to me.
Yeah, I think Webb, the skills are still very much there. I think that strikeout rate going up is like very interesting. Cause it was at 20% last year. It's now You're at 27%. I have an interesting theory, and I'm looking at basically two numbers. His BABIP last year, BABIP went up from 316 to 354. Mm-hmm. His starting shortstop, Willy Adames, has a negative 9 DRS this season. I'm curious if those two things are correlated at all.
They gotta be.
Because again, like Webb is one of the most prolific ground ball pitchers, right? He's almost always at the top of the league in terms of ground ball rate. This year it's a little bit lower at 54%, but the two seasons before that he was, you know, in 60%, 63% in 2023. So for a guy who gets that many ground balls, if the defense behind you just isn't as good as it has been in years past, like your numbers are just gonna not look as good, right? Your BABIP's gonna go up. And I think maybe that's a reason for what's going on right now. I think I still fully believe in the skills. I think the strike rate going up is just kind of a good evidence of that. I think he's getting a little unlucky with the defense behind him.
Yeah, it's weird because I feel like Adames, like it wasn't a part of his scouting report that it was like he's kind of iffy to stick at shortstop like someone like Bo Bichette or like Trey Turner, right? Like he was considered to be a really solid shortstop defender. So hopefully this isn't like the start of him falling off, and you know, it makes it really hard for like Webb and guys like Landon Roop to, you know, to have lower BABIPs. But I think that hopefully, you know, defensive metrics can be a little noisy year to year, right? Like hopefully Adames, you know, bounces back some. And I think that, yeah, I think that Webb could be discounted because people are going to say, oh, he's still a whip risk, but his BABIP is kind of unsustainably high, even if the defense isn't ideal. And he's getting more strikeouts and less ground balls, right? So that should help the BABIP a little bit. So I think that, yeah, maybe people might miss that he's actually become a little bit of a different pitcher, and maybe we can get a nice, you know, a nice little discount.
Yeah, Adames last year, weirdly enough, minus 16 DRS in Milwaukee. But the,
right,
the
maybe I have the wrong impression then.
The years before that, he's been great though. Eight DRS in 2023, nine in 2022. So just maybe last year was kind of weird, and then this year has also been a little weird. So
yeah, 2 years in a row. That could be the start of a trend for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on to Wednesday's games. We are going to talk about Vladimir Guerrero, but the cover boy for Costanza was David Schneider, who also had a really good game because, again, these Blue Jays were just hitting the crap out of the ball in Colorado. But yeah, Vlad went 4-for-7 with a homer, a double, 4 runs, and 2 RBI. Yeah, the Jays put up 20 runs in this game, which is kind of funny. But yeah, Vlad was great. 4 hits, as we mentioned, his 18th home run of the season. The power's been a bit down for him this year, but he's still a tough out as he just really good average, really good OBP. He's had 6 homers in the last 30 games, which could point to maybe a little bit of an increase in power over the next 2 months. Alonso obviously has all the headlines in terms of leading first baseman in homers. Vlad, to me, still is very much kind of the most complete first baseman in terms of just how many categories he services. You could argue that maybe Josh Naylor with the steals is also really, really solid. Vlad's currently slashing 296, 398, 481. So really, like, the one number that's lacking there is the slugging. It's just because he just hasn't hit that many homers. To me, Vlad is still, you know, easily top three guy, right? If you're going to say your top three are Vlad, Naylor, and Alonso for this year. But is he right now the clear-cut top first baseman in terms of fantasy? Or is it still just kind of a bit murky and just kind of depends on what you like more? Do you like steals? Do you like homers? Do you just like average? You could kind of pick between those top three first basemen.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely close between him and Pete Alonso. Like, Vlad's kind of doing it with, like, the Freddie Freeman, you know, path to success, right? Like, which is a really non-traditional first base profile, but still awesome. Great batting average, you know, 25 home runs, maybe 30 in a good year. And then, you know, chipping in steals, right? Vlad has 5 this year, which is nice. He only had 2 last year. So, yeah, I think that in terms of, like, the most well-rounded profile, I think he's your guy here. I know Alonso's been hitting for a good average this year, but that's not really something he's historically done. I don't think he can really go wrong either way. But, yeah, it's nice to see this stretch because going into the All-Star break, his profile this year was, like, really bland, and you probably were really disappointed with it as, like, a second-round pick. So he's always a guy who, like, the under-the-hood stuff looks great, but he doesn't really consistently pull the ball in the air, so he's probably going to underperform a little bit. But it's nice to see, you know, his actual production kind of mirroring it a little bit more closely. And he has third base eligibility in the Yahoo leagues, which is just like a cheat code. So, you know, you got to love that.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite things about this past offseason was that he had third base eligibility.
Because
It was like, oh, you could draft him. You could legitimately have him and Alonso back to back in like a 15 teamer, and it wouldn't be a bad move. It made for some very interesting conversation. I don't think he gets third base eligibility next season though.
He hasn't played any games, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. But I always love Vlad, and it's nice to see him kind of turn around and do a little bit more with the power instead of just kind of being like a decent ratios guy. So we got to talk about pitching, and we're going to talk about Gavin Williams. Thanks to Nick for the does he Gav the Will to Win SP Brown article. He was one out away from a no-hitter until Juan Soto just kind of laughed in his face and just hit a ball to deep center. 8.2 innings, 1 run, 1 hit, 4 walks, and 6 strikeouts for him. Gavin's been interesting. I've picked him and dropped him in a lot of leagues just because I believe in the skill set, but it hasn't been super consistent. He hasn't been going super deep in games. There was a moment in June, kind of Nick notes in his roundup article, that his extension really dropped and the velocity also dropped as well. This start, I don't know, maybe did he grow a little bit? Because the extension was at 7.4 feet, which is kind of insane. He was throwing in at 97 miles an hour, and that was like, it wasn't dropping at all during the game. It was pretty steady. Gavin's kind of makeup is fastball, super curve. If you've been following Nick at all in the SP Roundup Gardo, you know he's been asking for him to get a cutter. The cutter has shown up a couple times here and there. This past start, 15% cutters, 13% sinkers. So Really taking advantage of the fact that he's got good extension on those fastballs, making it a bit more deceptive. Finding strikes has been really tough for him too, and that's kind of why he hasn't been going super deep in the games. But his pitches were pretty reliable this game, 61% strike rate on the curve, using it a lot to left-handed batters. Sweeper was just about as good to righties. The one issue, of course, was the four walks, but, you know, nonetheless, that's still a very impressive start for Gavin. Basically, there's a lot of recency bias with him, right? He's been really good in July, and obviously this last start. Kind of in the similar conversation to just Bayo and Giolito as well, is Gavin a guy that you just kind of ride until the wheels fall off, or is he kind of firmly someone who you stick on your roster even if a bad start comes?
Yeah, it's so tough. I feel like his season has had so many more ups and downs compared to most guys. Like, the extension's changing, the pitch mix is fluctuating. Like, he's clearly still trying to find his footing as a major league pitcher. You know, he has a nice kind of floor foundation with the size and the velocity, but still kind of figuring out his mix. I don't have any, you know, Gavin Williams, so I'm kind of glad I don't have to make this decision, because it's got to be incredibly frustrating to figure out which way to go. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little nervous about how he's going to do it his next start after he threw like 126 pitches, which is the most, I think, of any starter this year, and like the top five in like this decade. So I might be a little worried about the next one. I think he does get an extra day of rest at least, which is nice, but yeah, I don't know. I'm a little tepid on Williams. I think this is another guy where the whip is really bad. Even after, you know, he almost threw a no hitter. He walks a ton of guys. Like, he's had a sort of a breakout season, but also like the flaws are still very clear, right? He kind of reminds me a little bit of like Taj Bradley in a way. Like, he's had good moments, but the flaws with Bradley are still really clear, right? He throws a lot of pitches, but he doesn't always have the greatest, you know, control of them, and it does lead to some ugly outings. So, not a ringing endorsement, a little bit worried, but you know, this was obviously a great game.
Yeah, I definitely agree in the fact that you don't start him next game. Like, there's just a historic precedent that you never start guys after they throw like a near no hitter or you know, go nine innings, because it just never turns out well. But yeah, his stuff always just looks so good, but it just can't put it together, right? Like, it's kind of surprising that he only has a 23% strikeout rate. Like, I would expect that to be higher for someone like him. But I mean, even in this game, 8.2 innings, but only 6 strikeouts. So it's kind of tough, where he's like, you know, a fine pitcher, but not someone who's like maybe great fantasy wise, which is a little unfortunate. But
yeah, I mean, like, he has a career 11% walk rate. Like, how many starting pitchers have had consistent success with that kind of walk rate? Like, Hunter Green before this year, right? Like, Nolan Ryan. Like, I don't really know. But obviously Hunter Green, like, attacked the zone this year and figured out how to throw strikes and has been tremendous. So, like, I think that's something, some type of step forward like that's in the tank for Williams. It's just so hard to necessarily bet on it. And I feel like you're going to have to pay a pretty solid price for him next year.
Yeah. I mean, maybe this 3 fastball makeup will help cut those down a little bit. But yeah, it's hard to say when you know, if his curveball and his sweeper just aren't that reliable and getting strikes, then yeah, you're just going to get a lot more balls and walk a bunch more guys that way. So all right, well, that is going to wrap it up for the player performances. A lot of interesting pitcher talk there, a lot of interesting decisions that you're probably going to have to make down the stretch on your fantasy teams. But one important decision is, who are you going to stream? And so let's look back at last week's streamers. Any interesting notes here with the guys that we talked about?
Yeah. Sorry, I was just looking at the leaderboard of like walk rates from guys the last few years. Last like 6 years, Blake Snell, I guess, is another guy like Edward Cabrera. Yes. So like, there's a little bit of precedent, but like, it's kind of a tough line to toe, I feel like.
But I feel like those guys also have like elite strikeout numbers.
Right, which Williams is not.
Williams does not have that. Yeah.
But yeah, streamers last week, a little bit of a mixed bag. Obviously, we have Michael Soroka, who we talked about earlier. He went 2 innings, 1 earned run with 3 strikeouts, and then got hurt, went on the IL, so we didn't get the second start there. Definitely a bummer. Was hoping to get a good last couple of months from him. Mike Burrows in his first start of the week, it was a dud, 4 2/3, 6 earned, 3 strikeouts, 1.71 whip. On the other end of the spectrum, I think he actually might have faced Burrows, was Justin Verlander. He went 5 scoreless innings, unfortunately got no decision because of a blown save. 4 strikeouts, 0.8 whip, so good start there for his first start of the week. gets the Nationals this weekend. And then Davis Martin, first start of the week, another tough one. 5 innings, 5 earned, 5 strikeouts, 1.8 whip. So kind of 1-2 with an incomplete last week on the streamers. This week, I think it's a little bit of a tough slate, honestly. There's a couple of decent matchups, but none that I feel, or not as many as usual, that I feel like pretty confident in. First one's Logan Allen. He's 15% Yahoo, 5% ESPN. He's on the Guardians. 2 home starts against Miami and Atlanta. Both of these offenses are only like slightly below average overall, but they're worse against lefties, kind of like around 90 WRC plus, like maybe 20th to 25th in the league. And Allen has just been kind of quietly, consistently decent. He hasn't been incredible by any stretch, but he's only allowed more than 3 earned runs once in his last 10 starts. So he's kind of like a 5 innings, 2 earned type of guy, maybe better wins league target than quality starts just because he doesn't go 6 a ton. And the Guardians have actually been winning a decent amount of games. So, and then Nestor Cortez, just off the IL, this will be his second start back, 29% Yahoo, 16% ESPN. This is 1 start at the Giants. His velocity was kind of back more in line with where it was last year in his first start back, even though the results were a little uneven. So, you know, not even necessarily a slam dunk start, but might be worth adding down the stretch. You know, he got traded to the Padres, and they have a decent park to pitch in and, you know, have done a lot of good things with their starters. Next one, have been featured a ton of times on the streaming article or streaming recommendations this year. Jameson Taillon, 31% Yahoo, 17% ESPN. This will either be his first or second start back from the IL. He's made 1 rehab start in AAA that went poorly. I imagine he'll get another one this weekend, and then he's going to get the Pirates likely next weekend. Make sure you double check the schedule and see how it shakes out, and make sure his rehab start goes a little bit better this time. But, you know, soft matchup, great cheap win opportunity. And then last but not least is Michael McGreevy of the Cardinals, 6% Yahoo, 2% ESPN, so very low rostered. He gets Rocky Road, so this is a pure matchup play and also a ratios play. McGreevy is not a big strikeout guy. Miles Mikolas and Matthew Liberatore are the other two guys who get the Rocky Road, but Mikolas gets another start on the weekend. So if you have to, you know, you don't do daily leagues, you probably got to stay away from that. And Liberatore, his velocity, I think, was way down in his last start, so I just didn't want to recommend him. But, you know, Rocky Road is always a decent opportunity, so just be aware of that.
Yeah, I just know Mikolas has been throwing up meatballs. That's kind of been the mark against him. But yeah, Jameson Taillon would be nice to see him healthy, because that run early in the season, where I think it was like, what, 4 or 5 starts of just like the best matchups you could ever ask for, and that Cubs offense was doing so well. Like, that was just so much fun to have. And then Logan Allen, I mean, yeah, I think the frustrating thing for me having him was, I'm in a quality starts league, just doesn't go deep enough. But sometimes the ratios are pretty decent, right? Like you mentioned, the earned runs are going down, and it's also the year of the lefty. So, you know, that's got to help account for a little bit.
Yeah, nobody can hit lefties this year for some reason. It's been really weird. But yeah, Allen, like I'm looking now, he's got 7 wins and 6 quality starts, right? So he's not, you know, racking up those, but he's just been on an okay run lately. Like, I don't think he's a drop everything to get this 2-star guy, but it's just good to know that there's an okay option out there.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, that is it for this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Again, you can find us on This Week PL on Twitter. Send us your comments and questions at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at @thejohncuh and Patrick at @pfitzgerald_99. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you listen to your podcast, and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcherless Pro. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcherless Discord, get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. It is still humming. We are still talking a lot of baseball, obviously, because playoff season is coming up soon, and that's kind of when the important moves need to be made. So definitely check out the Discord if you've got Pitcherless Pro. But yeah, that's all for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Patrick, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.